Hey everyone, and welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, here to wish you a happy new year. Woo! Oh, we should have had noisemakers.
Should have.
I know.
That would have been fun.
Martha's back from Maui, so she couldn't think of that. So that's okay. We still wish you a happy new year, and maybe next year we'll put hats on and do the noisemakers and stuff like that. We'll up the ante on that. But happy new year to you all. We have a very fun show for you today. Later on in the show, of course, you know, we had to kick off the year with relationships because that's what we talk about here at Boundless. Later on in the show, we actually have a listener whose friend is engaged, getting married to someone who is not a believer, and she's wondering what her role is in this, what she should say, what this looks like as far as what input she should give or not give. And then our culture segment, we have Andy Stanley back. Everyone loved when he talked about his book, Enemies of the Heart. And he is back to talk about his love, sex, and dating series, which was hugely popular. I think I had it shared on my Facebook wall about 5 million times. Everyone, did you see this? Did you see this? So yes, we saw it. Woo! So he wants to talk about that. And he's a guy who has tons of young adults in his church. And of course, his church has how many satellites? I don't even know. It's one of the biggest churches in the U.S. now, I guess, if you include the satellites. It's just all kinds of crazy. So Andy Stanley, great guy. And he works with a lot of young adults and has a lot of insight there. So fun stuff. But here we are at our round table. We have four ladies in the studio today. So guys, don't be discouraged. Your day will come. It's just quite frankly, we couldn't get guys to talk about this topic. So we're just going to be honest. Yeah. Shocking. So, and this is when Martha, I think you came up with this, right?
I did.
I know. This was her idea. So we are going to be talking today about, because, you know, it's a new year and New Year's are when people always make goals or resolutions and stuff. But do you ever make relational goals? Do you ever make marriage goals? Do you ever look ahead to the future and see what you could be doing intentionally to move yourself along that path towards marriage and family? Because that is what we support here at Boundless. If you do not know that by now, I don't know how to help you. but anyway, so we have some fun guests here at the table. Martha, first of all, is here.
Yes, I'm here to talk 2012.
Yes.
Or 2012. I don't know.
2012.
Sure, let's start a new trend.
We're here to put 2011 behind us and move into the new year and see. Yep. You know, you had written a blog post about that, about looking ahead, you know, a year and stuff like that.
Oh yeah,
I know
what it's going to be like a year from now.
I know this could be the year where we have stories to tell. So we'll see. And then she rustled up two other young women who are going to join the fray and talk to us. First of all, we have Jen. Jen, welcome.
Thanks. I'm excited to be here.
I know. It's great to have you. They're both new to the show. Never been here before. So Jen and Jenny, actually. So we're going to have to keep them straight. Although one of them we may just call Violet for the show, just to have it completely different.
That we'll could see. Be Jenny.
Thanks, okay. Love.
She'll be Violet. She'll be all confused, or you know, Violet or Madeline,
who?
Or we'll come
what?
Up with a name, something like that. So, no, but very wonderful to have both of you here. And it's probably confusing. Like it's as I kind of intro the show, people are like, "What? What do they mean? What are they talking about? Like 2012, whatever." But we have all been involved in very real and intentional. What would we say? How did you describe it, Martha? You didn't say campaign.
Well, I did say campaign, but
oh, you did. Okay.
Just
marketing.
Yeah,
campaign.
Don't say that.
Yeah, I don't. It was brainstorming session.
Well, let's think campaign, but not so militant.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a soft campaign.
Well, I think even resolution is kind of a
yeah.
It's about intentionality and having a goal or something. So.
Goals for relationships and what we can do, and especially I think for women, this is helpful because we often feel like we don't have a part to play. We feel like our hands are tied. We feel like we're just sitting there waiting for guys to ask us out, and they don't, or else they're craving, whatever. So we get discouraged easily, and it's kind of like that new time around the front end of the year where we feel like, oh, there's renewed hope, and there's something that we can do, and maybe this year will be the year. So we've all kind of done that, and so I want to just throw out the question first of all in saying, was this something, we'll talk about our specific stories and the specific things we've done, but was this something, say, 10 years ago that you ever thought you would do and be this intentional about looking ahead towards relationships or marriage?
Nope.
Jenny says no.
Yeah, 10 years ago, I'm pretty sure I wasn't even thinking about it.
I thought everything would just fall into place and just happen on its own, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we would have all been probably like late teens, 2 years ago.
Yeah,
so.
Right. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Fresh in college and had no idea what we'd be facing.
At that
these
point,
days,
you probably still had in your head kind of that natural progression of, I'm just going to do college because that's expected of me.
Happens.
And then surely I'll get married and start a family. Yep. And whatever.
I was much more interested in sports and hanging out and having fun.
I wanted to get an A on my test. Who cares about anything else? Mm-hmm. But
Okay. So when did the switch flip? When did you finally realize? I mean, was there a pivotal point where you finally realized, here's something that I can actually do, something I need to get on board with? Or was it something you came up with or something that girlfriends told you about or what?
You know, I think for me, it's been more and more over the last couple of years, just realizing the need to be intentional about things, especially just in small group with Martha or wherever else, just realizing that things that we just thought would happen naturally just haven't. Mm-hmm. So I think especially just the last couple of years, really trying to think about, okay, what can we do? How can we be intentional about these things and, still trusting God to move, but helping along that process. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for me, it's definitely been a process of a few years of kind of going through some rougher relationships and rougher periods of time. And then just recently saying, you know what, it's not all that bad. And so I'm going to get back into it and do something about it and learn about myself in the process. Because I think I had a pretty negative view on dating and relationships. I was pretty skeptical. And so I think for me, it was going through those periods of time. And then in the last probably year going, you know what, I think I can handle this. I think it'll be fun. I think it should be fun. And so taking on that approach instead of looking at it as a woe is me kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. So
it's good.
Yeah. I remember when Candace Waters' book Get Married came out and a friend said, we should read this. And at the time I was like, what? You can't write a book about how to get married. I mean, that, you know, but
is this the one that you posted or sent to us?
I could have.
Not yesterday.
Oh.
Oh, yes. There's a new book called Get Married in 365 Days.
I haven't read the book, so I can't really judge on it, but
yeah.
That was a little crazy.
Well, and that was a secular book. And
right.
I just thought that was interesting. Seems to be a hot topic.
Well, and there's one written, it was written years ago now, but by a woman who was a Harvard MBA. And it was basically approaching marriage like you would your MBA and how you do just set goals and make, you know, and I was like, whoa. And but she, of course, had all these stories of people that did it and it worked. Right. And I'm man. So, it's again that balance of like, you know, how much effort do you put into it versus trusting the Lord?
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so let's talk about specifics here as to what we actually did, because we talked about these as campaigns, and they really are intentional things that we have done. And looking ahead to 2012, I think this might be encouraging for some folks. So, Martha, why don't you start with your story of, obviously, you read Get Married, finally.
Yes.
Okay, you gave it a chance.
Yes, and read that with some girls at work, and I think it was later on, I don't know if it was that summer or sometime later, still nothing was really happening in my world. So I gathered a few more friends and it was, about a summer's time. Jenny was part of that group where...
Violet.
Yeah.
Violet.
We met about once a week just to talk about different things, you know, that were on our mind or questions and having time to pray specifically. And it was just being intentional as in community to talk about it. And
I think community was huge. Like, that's what I walked away with. Just having, you know, sisters that really knew my heart. And, you know, I think for so long I felt like I was alone. Like, I don't know why, it just didn't dawn on me that other people were feeling the same thing I was about, you know, being single and wanting a family. And it was huge.
So at the end of the summer, we got a group photo together. And Jenny is actually a graphic designer. So do you want to tell us?
We just put a postcard together and we put, what verse was it? Proverbs 3:5-6 on there and sent it out to friends and family. And I think it was the first time I really asked people to specifically pray for me and for marriage and, you know, just what that looked like in my life and the life of my friends as well. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it really was like a marriage prayer card,
right? Yeah, like missionary card was the idea of it.
That is so cute.
Yeah. Yeah, so hopefully, you know, people would put us up on their refrigerators and, you know, once in a while glance at it and be like, oh, yeah, we're supposed to pray for them and, you know, all those things. So, and I think it also helped, I think, getting just us on people's minds and just, mm-hmm. you know, hey, I know some single person and, mm-hmm. you know, you never know what can happen. So
and even just to vocalize that desire,
yeah,
I think right. was yeah. kind of a bold
thing to do. It was a step. It was
too.
A step yeah. for me.
Yeah. Well, and that's what we've heard from so many women who listen to the show is really that was a pivotal time for them when they finally realized that I don't have to be ashamed to mm-hmm. mention this as a mm-hmm. desire and to mm-hmm. really say to my family and my friends that, mm-hmm. you know, because there's so much, I think, in our culture of just either if you say anything, it means you're not trusting the Lord mm-hmm. or if you say something, it means you're too desperate or you're too whatever. But to be like, no, honestly, this is really a desire in mm-hmm. my heart and I'm not going to be ashamed to say it. So.
Totally. I wouldn't, like, it was always hard for me to talk about it, even in, like, small groups with girls or whatever. Like, I never wanted to dwell on the fact that I was single, that I wasn't in a relationship, because I didn't want to seem not content or, mm-hmm. you yeah. know, and I just didn't want to complain. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, the more you focus on it, the more you're like, yeah. okay, that's not in my life. So, so I can totally see that. But I think that there's a freedom when you acknowledge it and you go, okay, well, I can do something about this and I can change it. And, mm-hmm. And you're still trusting in God. I mean, we trust in God with our jobs and with our friendships and all those things, but it doesn't mean we stand idly by either. There is a faith and there's an action in that. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's part of this too. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So tell us, Jen, a little bit about your story, about what you're doing, because you're currently in the process of something right now.
I am in the process. And this is a little bit weird for me to be like saying who I am and the process, because I was going to keep them very separate. Oh. like I wasn't ever going to put my name to what I was doing. But I'm doing this thing, I'm calling it 27 dates, and I was challenged for my 27th birthday, so now you all know how old I am. I was challenged to go on 27 dates in this year, and so, well, my birthday was in September, so 12 months from mm-hmm. September, and so, I just thought, first of all, I thought, no way, I can't even get a date in a year. Get 27, like that's not possible. So, and it, so it was just kind of funny in that sense. But then, as I thought about it more and more, I thought, you know what, that would be kind of interesting. Like that would be really challenging for me to go on 27 first dates. Is what mm-hmm. it was really about. And I mean, just thinking about that, like thinking through all the awkwardness, all mm-hmm. the like different situations mm-hmm. that you don't really know this person. And, you know, do you open the door? Do you wait for him to open the door? Do you all those kinds of little things? And mm-hmm. so as I thought about it, I thought, you know what, I'm going to do that. I'm going to do the 27 dates and then and just throughout the process, take the pressure off of dating. I feel like especially in the Christian circle, dating is you go on one date and you should know mm-hmm. if whether or not that person is right for you. Mm-hmm. And I feel like and maybe I'm wrong on this, but I've always felt like that's why guys are hesitant to ask is because mm-hmm. they really just wanted a chance to get to know somebody, but they don't know the whole story yet. Mm-hmm. And so if they're asked, especially in the Christian circle, if they're asking a girl on that first date, it's like a huge ordeal. Mm-hmm. Whereas I feel like it should just be something mm-hmm. where like, okay, two people, hey, you're interesting, I'm interesting, let's go and have coffee, let's go have dinner and get to know each other. Mm-hmm. So I really wanted to take the pressure off of it. And then the other aspect of it was that I wanted to meet different guys. I think I've always kind of stayed in my little box of this is who I think is my type. And when I really haven't dated that much, so how would I know? And I feel like I'm really limiting myself in that sense. And I think as women, we do that a lot. So I wanted to learn more about myself in the process and just get out of that box.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, not to sound crass or anything, but I think part of the reason why Christian singles are so bad at dating is because we just don't do it.
Yeah.
We're just lame.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you see these pictures, and I mean, obviously, you know, you don't want to go the extreme of getting some kind of Hollywood ideal or where it just always works out and things
right.
click or whatever,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of people are good daters because they're just well practiced. Mm-hmm. They know how to talk to people.
Yeah.
They know how to ask someone out. They mm-hmm. know how to respond without looking like a total freak, you know,
yeah.
and running and telling all your girlfriends and like flipping out and stuff, you know, and you just look like a junior high.
Yeah, she didn't call.
Yeah.
You know, like we freak out about that. And I mean,
yeah.
we still freak out and we still overanalyze and we're probably always going to do those things. But
yeah.
It does teach you a lot about just even social interactions with somebody, like getting to know somebody for the first time is such a skill that you can mm-hmm. learn. And, you know,
yeah.
I'm putting myself in that situation every
yeah.
time. So
mm-hmm. now have you been on a few dates? So
I
far?
Have.
Okay.
Yeah.
So any lessons learned?
Wow. Whoa.
What's been, I mean, was it what you expected or what have you, yeah. how's the process been?
So I've gone on 5 and I think that the, and I've gone on dates with non-Christians and Christians. So that, first of all, is a big lesson of, there was always a piece missing with the non-Christians. Mm-hmm. With the Christians, it was like, okay, we could go to a different level pretty quickly of in our conversation, and it was comfortable. There was one who was a non-Christian, and just the discussion that we had was really challenging to me personally, like to learn about my faith more and to be put in that spot was really great. I think it's been harder than I thought it would be. Mm-hmm. More of the guys have shown interest than I thought, too. Hmm. I don't know. Mm-hmm. So those are a few things. Yeah.
No, that's good.
I could keep going.
That's good. How did you I mean, this sounds ridiculous. How did you find these guys?
No, I wouldn't know.
This is very interesting. So for years, right, there are no single guys. My friends don't know any single guys. Nothing. Nobody's setting up anybody. All of a sudden, when I do this 27 dates, it's like, oh my gosh, I know of a guy that would be great for this. Oh my gosh. I'm like, really? Mm-hmm. Where have these guys
been? Coming out of the woodwork, no.
Right, totally. Mm-hmm. So it's friends that are, one of my friends goes salsa dancing a lot, and so she has met several guys through that and, you know, gave them my number, and so I've hooked up with them in that way, and then just friends in small group and mm-hmm. church and different friends hanging out with. So they're all coming out of, you know, it's kind of, I can't do it myself. Mm-hmm. So they have to kind of help mm-hmm. me in the matter. And
so you have your little network.
Yes.
That's kind of working on
yes.
your behalf. That's good.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, there was a guy, you know, they had, where had they reported on that on CNN? That guy helped Chaz get married or something like that. And it's a guy out in San Francisco who's doing, he's going to pay $10,000 for the person who introduces him to his wife. So,
oh gosh, there's no reward. Sorry.
No. This of your heart.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure he's some like venture capitalist, so you don't have to worry
there
about
you
that.
There you go. My happiness is your reward.
Yeah, no, exactly.
No, but that's the other piece of it is that I'm really like, the goal is not to get married out of the process. And if I end up finding, you know, a great guy or whatever, that's great. Like, I'm not closed off to that and mm-hmm. I'm not hard-hearted or whatever. But the goal is really to learn more of this process and dating and about me and just break out of the circle. It's, mm-hmm. I've, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think as soon as I put the goal as, like, to get married, then I'm putting pressure on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, but I mean, it is a good step. I mean, because obviously you're going to have to date someone before you can marry them. So it
yeah,
could
hopefully.
Be.
Yeah.
So with God in the mix,
unless
it's definitely
there's an arranged
hopeful.
Marriage, know, right? Which that yeah. would be a little scary.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's just, I think it's kind of one of those chicken egg things where you don't right. want to sit down with a guy on the date and be like, you know, so anyway, I need to find out if I'm going to marry you. I mean, right. it's always a possibility that right. that could be the person you marry, right. but you don't want to be all like crazy about it.
Yeah.
So that's good. So, okay. What, when was
Lisa, you have to tell us about your.
Oh,
yes.
That's true. Okay. I have my own thing. Okay. Well, I have two. One is just a funny thing. You know, my friends, several of us have for years now put a little moniker to the year, you know, in the new year and figure, you know, this is going to be the year and stuff. So
2010. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Year of men.
Yeah. So 2010 was find the men in 2010. Oh, okay. And we all made shirts. We all made t-shirts, and I was the only one who wore mine. Everyone else was too ashamed to, ladies. So that means that God is going to reward me with a spouse before them. Mm. That's what I'm convinced of.
Yeah, of course.
But no, so we all made just kind of as a fun little like girl pack kind of thing, you know, and decide we didn't say like find the men in 2010. We did like a little logo and whatever with it. And it was pretty cute. But so we did that. And that was just to kind of keep it at top of mind for us to be prayerful about it and encouraging one another and remind each other that, yeah, you know, because we're always preaching to each other. Don't be afraid to say it and don't be afraid to be set up and don't be afraid to, you know, tell your acquaintances, you know, that you're willing to go out with guys that they know and stuff. So we kind of did that as a little rah-rah. And then now beginning in the summer, and those of you who read the e-newsletter, I talked about this in the e-newsletter, but I started a challenge, a 100-day prayer challenge of praying for mm-hmm. marriage for 100 days straight. And that ended now the week of Thanksgiving. And I think it was just really eye-opening for me to learn kind of what some of my preconceptions were about marriage and where I was in the process, and really feeling, had I lost hope? Do I feel like I'm just in this miracle category and that's all I'm relegated to at this point? But really, what could God do in my heart as far as giving me a piece about the process and where I am right now, and unveiling anything, you know, that I need to work on, any attitudes in my heart, anything about that? And then also really just recognizing that prayer is supernatural and God mm-hmm. really does move through it. Mm-hmm. And it taught me a lot of things about prayer in general, as well as on the relational front. So that's been really encouraging to see. And I've had a lot of people ask me about it, as I've mentioned, you know, doing that. And it was just the thing that popped to mind when I saw the opportunity to do this challenge. There are mm-hmm. many things that I could have prayed about for 100 days and probably will pick it up again and do some other things with that. It's just a great discipline. But
was there ever a day that you didn't want to pray about it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I would say I definitely had my days where I was putting in my time, you know, where I knew that I had to do it. I had to check it off the list and stuff. And so I would pray. But and I mentioned kind of in telling about this when I talked about it in the e-newsletter, how a lot of times I would start thinking about it on the front end of the day, because usually my prayer time was at night, and either I would prayer walk, like in the summer, I did that around my neighborhood, and it would prompt me to pray for other things, which was really cool. And I started praying for you know, some of the schools in my neighborhood and the hospital and some of my neighbors and stuff, and just it kind of expanded the net a bit. But also I would start thinking about that during the course of the day. So then it kind of just made me mindful of it throughout the day. Mm-hmm. And so I would, whether I was wrestling with God over something specific, it was also I realized that marriage was there was almost a stronghold issue there for me, in the sense that I really wanted control over my situation. And this is something that I cannot control at all. And so there were days where I was so frustrated with a circumstance or something. And I felt like it was almost like just making it to that next night of prayer. It was like I could barely make it through the day and just be like, Lord, I got to pray about this, or I'm upset about it, or whatever. So it really showed me how dependent I am upon God in this process. And so, so that was good. So I finished the 100 days. I am not dating anyone. I am not married. I am not, but I'm still to realize that even in that, I wasn't using it as some kind of talisman. I was using it as a means of saying, hey, there's still hope and God's still in control. And I know that I've brought this before him and he knows what's what. So, so that was a good exercise, I think, for me in that. So,
'cause there have definitely been those moments where I'm like, I don't want to go on another date. So I was just kind of wondering with you, just praying with it. Like, sometimes I'm just like, oh, I don't want to.
Yeah. Well, because it's like what we said at the beginning. It's like we feel like this should be easier than it is. Like, you know, I quote, my friends give me a hard time and we laugh about this, because one of my sisters, when we were all doing the online thing for a while, my friends and I, and we would talk about our crazy stories and whatever. My sister, who got married at 20, was like, it should not have to come to this. And we were just like, I know it shouldn't, you know. And we just feel like sometimes it's such this laborious process of just, rah, you know. How in that, like, do you guys stay encouraged? I mean, when you see, because, you know, is your prayer card still hanging up on people's fridges? Has anyone in your group gotten married yet?
No.
Not yet. Okay.
No.
So people need to continue praying.
Yeah, I still have the fixture up on my bathroom mirror, and I know another girl has it on her refrigerator, so it continues.
Yeah.
But
one thing that's been encouraging to me is a friend talked to me about being in the fourth quarter, and Tim Tebow, it's been, do they call it quarters? I don't know.
Yeah,
fourth quarter.
I mean, like, you can't give up. I mean, I feel like I'm on the cusp of something, something.
Yeah.
I don't
know. Overtime.
Or overtime. Yeah, maybe I'm in overtime.
No, I'm in overtime. Y'all are still in the fourth quarter. Third or fourth, maybe. Yeah.
But really, I mean, it's just a time to press in even harder and trusting God and being creative with these different little things. Yeah. And
Well, and we have, you know, we just had a conversation with a mutual friend the other day who was talking about how she felt like as she got older and she dated a couple guys and it didn't work out. And I remember she told me, she said, I just felt like now I was at a point where I could not in any way have God's best, or this guy that I was going to meet and marry eventually just wasn't going to be great. He was going to be okay, but he wasn't going to be great. And now she met this guy and he's just like a great fit for her in ministry and just where they are and what they're passionate about. And it just made her realize that, wow, all these other guys that I thought were just it and thought were just the story, you know, weren't. And here's this guy who never even knew him. He just popped out of the woodwork and stuff. And so it's really cool to see when God works and when we can look back on it in that sense is pretty cool. So, Well, awesome.
But you might have been waiting all this time too, and it not be a great situation, and that mm-hmm. might be part of your story too. And I think it's all a matter of like how you're faithful to the Lord in that. Like, that's awesome that that worked out well for her. But I mean, you look at marriages now, and they're rough. Like, it's mm-hmm. it's hard. And so our story might be that, yeah, we've waited this long, and our marriage might be just as hard too. And so we have to continue to develop our faith. I don't know. Like, I feel mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. I can't look at it and go, okay, because I've waited this long and I've been this faithful, I know the Lord's going to bless me with an mm-hmm. amazing man, and, you know, he's going to make all the money and do the right things, and, you know, I can just go and travel around the world, and, you know, like, mm-hmm. I don't know. I just,
right.
we have to oh, be yeah. realistic
about it. We have to trust that
too.
God's going
to
be faithful in walking us through whatever yeah. story we have. And yeah. that's why I think, I mean, that's why I love when I stumbled upon Boundless. It was so mm-hmm. pivotal for me to realize that, wow, there are definitely foundational things that I can right. do to mm-hmm. ensure that I'm marrying a guy who loves the Lord and who really is, you know, certainly not perfect and certainly growing and on a trajectory or whatever. But, you know, we're going to be looking in the same direction mm-hmm. and we're going to be, you know, and to realize what's important to know on the front end
yeah.
and then what's important to say, you know what, now I signed up for this and I commit and I go mm-hmm. from there mm-hmm. and walk through that. And so I think that's part of it as well. But
totally
good. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks, ladies, so much. So we will have to, you know, we're going to journey through 2012. We'll have to stay in touch with one another's stories and see what's up and get the scoop on the dates as they continue and yep. see if there are any prayer card updates. I do have another friend who is married, and she committed to, she took a group of 8 women and prayed for them every day on her lunch hour, and like 7 of them are now married. So
do you have her?
There
contact?
Are.
Get on that list.
I know. We got to get on the list. So it's funny because I've had other friends who like have houses of girls, and then there's one room where all the girls get married. So now it becomes like the prime wow. real estate. You know, they're like, I need to be in that room. It's like the marriage room, you know, so it's just cute what people do. So I don't know if there are counterparts to this for guys, or if guys are just like, no, I just need to ask someone out, or if guys think ahead with this kind of stuff, or have you guys like made t-shirts? Have you done prayer cards? I don't know. We didn't hear from any of you. So anyway, we'll have to, if you guys want to write to us or comment on the blog for sure and let us know what your stories are. Or if you think, like, is this crazy? Is this, should we not tell you about this? I don't know.
Go ahead.
You know what? We don't care because we're confident in the Lord. So we're okay with it. So, well, thanks, ladies, so much for weighing in and sharing your stories.
Thank you.
Well, hey, everyone. We are back with another culture segment, and we have Andy Stanley back on the phone with us here to talk about the wildly popular series that he preached at his church not too long ago called Love, Sex, and Dating. Andy, welcome.
Thank you so much. It's good to be back.
Oh, great to have you. Okay, so basically, we're just going to give you a few minutes here to fix all of our dating lives. That's what...
My problem.
We're going personal counseling sessions and just figuring out what in the world is our problem. No, I'm just teasing. You basically came up with this series and obviously on video, and many have watched it, many in our audience, and we even got commentary that, you know, you guys have to watch this. This is just some of the greatest stuff I've seen, and so much of it reflects what Boundless is always saying. And I know, first of all, in fact, I think I'm going to start at the end here with a weird question, and that is, what is the response that you've heard from doing that series, both from singles and maybe from others who maybe went in who were married, who were like, what does this have to do with me? And maybe they learned something too.
Well, the title of the series was The New Rules for Love, Sex, and Dating.
Yep.
And I went right after the singles population in our churches. And yet the response I got was not only from singles, but from men my age with kids and daughters specifically that were dating, because one of the messages I went after the guys and said, hey, let's be gentlemen. And the whole series was, you know, the whole message was about how to be a gentleman. So, of course, every man in the audience with a dating daughter, you know, was all about that. So the response overall was very positive. It was a very gritty, earthy series. I used all the bad words and just decided if I'm going to talk about it, I'm just going to go ahead and talk about all of it. And so there were some R-rated moments throughout this series. And I tell you, the most difficult moment in my life as a preacher was on Mother's Day. We had a mother in our audience. She's our oldest mother. She's 101 years old. And there she sits in her spot, and we honored her on Mother's Day. And then I preached the most, I don't know, out there message of my life. And I said things that you just don't normally say in church. And there sat Rose, 101 years old, having to sit through that. It was quite a morning. But you know what? As you said earlier, these are things that need to be talked about, and they need to be talked about at church. So we haven't been shy about it.
Yeah. Now, is she married or is she a widow or?
Rose actually passed away 3 weeks ago.
Aww.
We honored her in church. Her daughter was also named Rose, and they sat together, so we always talked about the roses. But she was awesome. I went up to her before the service, and I went ahead and apologized ahead of time. I said, Rose, today is going to be a very non-traditional Mother's Day message, and she just laughed and patted me on the hand, told me she loved me, and we went on and had church. So she was great.
I was going to say, she probably wanted to hear it because in case she needed to be fixed up with someone.
You never know.
you never know. She might have been all on board. So,
yeah.
Okay, well, talk to us a little bit about, because this is something I love to ask pastors, because you're kind of in the fray and you know, you see people in your congregation week in and week out and all different ages and stages. But what would you say, and you're not, you know, I mean, okay, you're not old, but I mean, honestly, you've been pastoring more than 2 years. Okay, let's just say that. But what would you say, in your opinion as a pastor, why are so many singles today delaying marriage? What is happening in the church that is causing this to happen? Because 25 years ago, it was like people graduated from college and they got married and they ended up in the young marrieds group. And now they're just in all these different small groups that are like bifurcated of different, you know, subjects and stuff.
Well, I don't think there's a single or a simple answer to that question. And anything I would say in response to that question is purely my opinion. And so my response to that whole phenomenon has not been to try to fix that, to say, hey, let's try to get people to get married earlier. My response to that phenomenon is if people are going to wait until their late 20s or 30s to get married, then we need to address this new singles culture that, again, is not a 5-year experience, but a 10-year or a 15-year experience. And it's completely unnatural. We were designed to be married young. And that doesn't mean everybody needs to run out and get married. It just means that the issues that we face as we wait to get married, you know, as we wait longer, those are going to be real issues. Those are going to be real struggles, whether it's sexually or loneliness or the depression that sometimes is associated with people who long for intimacy and long for a companion and can't find one, or go through a series of dating relationships or a series of live-in relationships. It creates a whole new set of problems. But I think the church has an answer for that. I think Scripture offers an answer to that. And in some ways, as a pastor, it creates an on-ramp to an audience that realizes serial dating is not a solution. Living with a partner for some time is not a solution. Trying to raise a child in a relationship that's kind of on again, off again is not a solution. And so, you know, I think it brings people to the point of brokenness quicker. And so as a pastor, we need to address that. And I actually love addressing that because I do think we have an answer at the church.
Yeah. So how do you address, for example, sexual purity? Because I say this often on Boundless that, you know, we've got all kinds of stuff for the 14-year-olds. We're all talking about purity rings and purity and, you know, signing pledges and whatever. But we've got 20s and 30-somethings that are just in their own homes doing who knows what.
Yeah. Well, step back. I think my approach or my message to the singles, and by the way, we have 5 campuses in Atlanta. We have a campus in town that's about 70% single, several thousand singles every Sunday, all different ages. So, and I go down and preach live at that campus because I love talking to college students and singles. And my message to them is real simple. It's a question. It's, are you who the person you're looking for is looking for? It's, are you who the person you're looking for is looking for. In other words, I know you're looking, everybody's looking, and it's okay to look, but the more important question is not have you found them, but have you become the person that you're looking for is looking for. And I think that that totally reprioritizes everything in a person's life when they decide, you know what, that's what I want to do. In fact, in the very opening message, a single girl in our church gave me permission to tell her story. In the opening message, I tell the story that she was kind of just living the life and dating whoever and doing whatever and involved in all kinds of just, you know, what singles in Atlanta do. And she was at a party one night, and she met this guy who was, like, so good-looking, had a great job. She found out he was a Christian, walking with the Lord, just an unbelievable guy. And she later that week, she was at her mom's house, and she started telling her mom about this guy, that he's, like, the total package mom. He's good-looking. He's got the job, the car. He's a Christian. And she just was going on and on. And she said her mother turned to her and said, "Honey, the problem is a guy like that is not looking for a girl like you." Hmm. And she said she literally fell to her knees. Her mom was folding clothes. She said, "I fell to my knees." And she said, "That's when I repented of my sin and sincerely gave my life to Christ." And when she told me that story in front of a group of people. We had a panel of about 20 singles that I met with. And, of course, we all almost threw up when we heard that story. It was like, "What? Your mother actually said that to you?" And she said, "Yeah, I said, "That's quite a mom." But she said that was the turning point for her, where she realized, "Hey, wait a minute. If I don't become the kind of person that the person I'm looking for is looking for, then I'll never, you know, when I meet that person, they're not even going to like me." So that was kind of the on-ramp for me for this entire series is, are you ready to become the person you're looking for is looking for? And that's what launched us into this four-part series we call The New Rules for Love, Sex, and Dating.
Yeah. Now, what would you say, you know, as far as talking through some of the rules, and obviously, you know, sexual purity is a big one. And like you said, dealing with, you know, who are you as a person and really, you know, what have you given to the Lord as far as who you are and how are you growing in maturity in Christ? What are some of the unrealistic expectations you think that young adults have today in dating that really is kind of stunting them in their search for a godly partner?
I think it's different for men and women, and I don't ever want to stereotype, but part of it is we've had consistently such poor role models. I mean, who would want to get married based on most marriages you see, whether it's the marriage that an individual saw growing up or the marriage they see on television? If you think about it, I say this all the time, you never see married people having sex in movies, ever. The last time I even remember something similar to that, I think, was the first Rocky movie. So sex is totally romanticized outside of marriage. You never see happy people that are married in movies for the most part, or television, or in culture. And so, you know, if you're 25 or 27 years old and you've never seen a great marriage, I mean, you've never seen a man and woman who still are crazy about each other, then the assumption is that doesn't exist. So the best it's going to be for me is if I'm 25, 26, 27 years old, and I'm just dating whoever and doing whatever, because the older I get, the less likely it is that I'm ever going to be satisfied in terms of intimacy or relationally. Well, that's just not true. It's just not true. But if you've never seen it, if you've never seen a great marriage, then you don't even know what to shoot for. And so consequently, I think part of where the church really needs to step up is to create more and more environments where single adults see great marriages and say, "Wow, at least I know what I'm shooting for now. At least I know what I'm trying to achieve or what I'm trying to move toward." But if you've never seen it, then you don't. Again, all you have to go on is what culture tells us and what we've seen growing up. And you know, so many of us just didn't see something we wanted to emulate.
Yeah. So, what is your vision, Andy, for within the church, really calling single young adults to live for something different and to you know, wait for more? Because I mean, I think I see, I hear anecdotally just so many single young adults, Christians in the church who now are cohabiting or are having sex, are, you know, I mean, I think the percentages just seem to be escalating, and it's so discouraging to say, you know, is there any difference? I mean, how, if you sat down with a group of young adults at your church and discovered those percentages were high, what would you do? I mean, what would that look like in the church?
Well, I think they are high. And our church, we've created, our whole vision for our church is to create churches and church people love to attend. So we have lots and lots of secular, previously unchurched people attend our church, which I absolutely love. So I feel like I kind of have a fresh slate and a clean slate in terms of what people think the Bible teaches, because they don't know. And the scripture is so clear. And when you say the kinds of things I'm about to say, it's not like, oh, I've never thought of that before, I've never heard that before, but it's bringing it front and center and beginning to live our lives from this perspective. And to begin with, in terms of the whole sexual thing, when I tell people, look, sex is not just physical. It's not just physical. It's treated as if it's just physical. We're told, you know, that it's just physical, but everybody knows sex is not just physical. And on the weekend that I talked specifically about sex in this series, I went through some really, really challenging questions as it relates to sex. And, I mean, you could have heard a pin drop, but the point was sex is not just physical. So if it's not just physical, then what do you do as a sexual being to make sure sex is satisfying? And if you treat it as if it's just physical, it'll never be satisfying. And that's why the most beautiful people in our culture can't seem to stay in a relationship, because clearly there's so much more to it. And the scripture teaches that. In fact, the scripture teaches that sexual sin is more damaging to an individual than any other kind of sin. It's not worse in terms of what God thinks. It's just more damaging, because when you try to treat something that's not just physical as if it's just physical, as if it's just some sort of sport, then there's so much deep, deep damage that can be done. And so, you know, but people need to hear that. We all need to hear that and take a break and, you know, stop and think, wow, if that's the case, what am I doing to myself? So anyway, those are just some of the things we've talked about in the series.
Yeah. Okay, so a lot of women out there, you know, are saying, and we talked about the value of marriage earlier on, and just how you even said, really, we're designed to be married young, but we're seeing a delay in marriage in our culture. Many Christian women are frustrated because they feel like they are committed to a local church, they're involved in ministry, they're doing this, they're doing that, but they're like, where are all the godly single men? I mean, are they in church? Are they not in church? Are they going to North Point? I mean, because if they are, then there's going to be a mass exodus down there to Atlanta. But
y'all, what? Single one of them are at our church. Come on,
that's what I hear. So, but I just see to, I seem to see whether it's churches in the States or some of our international listeners. They're all like, where are these guys? So you need to tell us, Andy, where are they?
I have no idea. I've got two that I'm raised. I think they seem to be doing okay
so far.
Yeah, you know, I think that is a legitimate question in terms of the way a woman would ask the question. But men have a similar question, and they look at me and say, you know, where are all the godly women who don't define godliness in terms of wanting me to know more Bible than they know? They want a spiritual leader, but I'm not as smart as they are. And so I think in some ways part of the problem is a wrong definition of spiritual, not only spiritual maturity, but what it means to be a spiritual leader. That's a little bit of the problem. But at the same time, the whole idea of searching for the right person, we all do that. I don't think that's ever going to change. I did that. We all kind of do that. But I'm absolutely convinced that when a man or a woman decides, in spite of wanting to find the right person, in spite of wanting to be married one day, I have to stay focused on becoming the person that the person I'm looking for is looking for. That has to be my focus. That has to be what centers me every single time. And then to just pray like crazy that God will protect me from the wrong people, God will teach me to guard my heart, and that when the time is right, if the time is right for me, that I'll recognize that person and that they'll recognize me. So there's no magic answer, and there is no there's no fortress somewhere where we're holding all the godly men. But it's a legitimate question. But I think as a woman asks that question, and even as a woman experiences the frustration of waiting and wondering and where is he and why are all guys alike, I think even as we carry those questions, we still have to come back to this one. Am I becoming, and am I the person that the person I'm looking for is looking for? Because at the end of the day, the only person I can control is myself, and the only person I'm ultimately responsible for is me.
Yeah. Well, let's talk kind of in light of that. Let's talk a little bit about the value of cross-generational input within a church. You know, we see so many single young adults who feel like either they're in singles groups or they're doing age, you know, demographically segregated small groups or something like that. And they realize, wow, I don't really have a lot of older married couples in my life, or I'm not receiving input from them, or I don't have great mentors. And we see generations back where really a lot of good matches were made, whether by families or friends or people who knew these individuals' characters and thought they would be a good match. Do you think there's a role really for the church in helping singles find godly mates?
Yes, but it's very difficult. It's easy for that to happen naturally and relationally. It is virtually impossible to program that. Mm-hmm. And what happens sometimes is singles in the local church go to a pastor or a church leader, and basically, without using these words, what they're saying is, where is the program that I can attend that will help me, you know, see the world differently in terms of how married people function, or help me become more mature, or connect me with married couples? And it is virtually impossible to program that. And I'll give you an example, because some churches experiment with mixed groups. But honestly, I don't think it's healthy for me to be in a couples group with three single women thrown into the couples group. That's going to impact the way the conversation goes with the couples. And there are women who are looking at the 25-year-old girl going, I'm not sure I want my husband in the group with the 25-year-old with the short skirt. I mean, it just creates issues. So it's not impossible to program. It's very difficult to program. But that just means churches have to think of some non-traditional ways to create natural connections between singles with these legitimate questions and these legitimate concerns with healthy married couples. And it is very, very, very challenging. I couldn't tell you here step one, two, and three. Mm-hmm. It happens best when it happens just naturally and relationally, but it's very difficult to create a program that ensures that that takes place. And part of it is we are all attracted to people who are like us. The singles want to be with singles. College students want to be with college students. And married couples want to be with married couples. So you're kind of working against nature a little bit to try to manufacture those kinds of environments. But it is possible.
Yeah.
I'll tell you where it works the best for us is in our, we call them strategic service groups or strategic service teams, that when people serve together and you have singles, families, couples, newlyweds, people who've been married a long time, serving side by side, that's when those relationships seem to really take on meaning. It's not a discipleship group. It's not a small group. It's serving together. And oftentimes, that creates the context for those natural relationships to transpire, and people get invited over to dinner, or people get invited to do something with a family. But trying to manufacture a group where you mix those two entities, it's very, very challenging. I'm not even sure it's possible long term.
Yeah. And like you said, like you said, it's so, you know, that kind of input is so necessary, though, because how else are these young adults going to see examples of good marriages unless they have marriages in their sphere that they can see, wow, there was some conflict there, but I saw how they worked through it. And, this, you know, wow, that's a challenge. So,
but one of the things that we do is we have a program called 2-to-1 mentoring. And when a couple is, even before they're engaged, if they're in a dating relationship, we will assign them to a 2-to-1 mentor who will meet with them as long as they want to meet, leading up to engagement, through their engagement, and up to the point to where they're married. We've been very successful with that.
Yeah, that's cool. Let's just talk briefly here about men in leadership, because, you know, we talked about where are the men in the church and stuff like that. What are you doing to encourage leadership among men in the church? You know, we have always the problem. We always get the letters from women who are like, you know, well, I'm trying to get this singles thing going in my church, but it's like the only people that are running it are women and the guys aren't doing anything. Do you see leadership as like an intentional, like, is that an issue within the church for some reason? Or what are you doing to kind of really help men step up and take on roles in that?
Well, to begin with, church leadership has to take giant steps toward defeminizing the church in general. Churches, if left to their own, will become more and more feminine and less masculine. That's just the natural flow. When that happens, men are very, very hesitant to step up and take leadership because they just don't want it. They just don't feel like there's a place for them, especially men with strong leadership skills. They don't want to be stuck on a committee that spends a lot of time meeting about nothing. They want to get things done. So really, the model that a church embraces has a lot to do with who shows up to lead and who steps up to lead. And we have been so extremely intentional about that from the very beginning. 16 years ago when we started, I told our core group, I said, I want a leadership culture here. I said, there's all kinds of cultures you can create in a church. I want a strong leadership culture where there is a place and where there's room for men and women with strong leadership skills to actually lead and not just simply sit in meetings. Nobody has time for that. So when you create that culture from the beginning, it attracts leaders and it attracts men and it attracts the kinds of situations you're talking about where people actually, you know, can actually be involved in leadership of the church. And when you do that, I mean, here's, you know, the secret of church is if you get the men, you get the women. I mean, it's just bottom line. If you create a church that attracts men, you know, women love that kind of church, not just because there's men there, but because their husbands want to attend there, their fathers want to attend there. You know, a church that's designed more for men, you're going to attract a more mature guy. And unfortunately, I don't know if it's unfortunate. That's just the way it works. So consequently, you know, we have a very strong leadership culture, and we attract strong leaders, which makes it easier to attract the kinds of men, I think, that some of the women in your audience are potentially looking for. So once again, they just all need to move to Atlanta and come to our church, and all their problems will be solved.
That's what I'm wondering. I think that's possible, yeah.
Also, no, not the case. Now that I've built it up so much, it couldn't possibly be that good, I realize.
Well, you know, we'll have to say, we'll send in secret shoppers.
There you go.
The Valmy Show.
Hey, that's not a bad idea.
We'll send
shoppers.
Give you a report back. No, I think that's so true, though. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I see in church bulletins, you know, different things that are meant to be programmed for men, but they're supposed to, like, sit around in some book study with, like, a teacup and read some pink book about something, you know, and I'm like, who thinks men are going to go to that?
Well, why did you put flowers down front?
Right. Right.
Yeah, honestly, I have a friend. He's a pastor. He became pastor of a large church, and he walked in and he realized just how feminine the church had become. You know what he did? This was, and you're going to laugh, but it was brilliant. He walked into the foyer of the church, and there's all these flowers and all these, you know, pictures. He took all of that out, and he literally went to the Harley-Davidson dealership and asked them if they would put two Harley-Davidson motorcycles on display in the foyer of his church. And they did. And he said, Andy, you know what happened? The next Sunday I walked in, and who was gathered in the foyer of the church talking? Men. And so he just took that as a sign, and he just went through and just recreated his whole church culture and environment. Well, you know, you get the men, you get the women, you get families. It's just, you know, I'm not trying to be chauvinistic. It's just the way it works. And so consequently, he feels like he's, you know, he's in a better place as a pastor. And the thing is, women love that because women want to meet men who love church, who love God, who aren't afraid to sit under the teaching of the word and aren't afraid to apply it. But sometimes our environments run men off unnecessarily. At least that's my opinion.
Well, then you need concrete floors, and then you don't have to have a church carpet committee to argue over colors of carpet, too. See, there's all kinds of solutions here.
There you go.
That's good. So. Okay, just as we close out here, because we've been talking about, obviously, about dating and getting to marriage, what, Andy, through all that you know, through your own experience, through, you know, the counseling that you've done over the years, what would you say are the non-negotiables that need to be in place before someone marries? Young adults who are looking at their relationship, maybe they're in one now, or they're thinking to themselves, you know, oh, I have this maybe arbitrary standard of what I'm looking for. What really, when we get down to brass tacks, what do they need to know?
Well, here's a couple of suggestions. They both need to be completely out of debt. And when I say that, people look at me like I'm crazy, and I tell them, you know what? You will be far more motivated to get out of debt if getting out of debt is a prerequisite to marriage. Because once you get married, it will be almost impossible in some cases to get out of debt. And marrying someone is not a solution financially. Basically, you carry your same financial bad habits into marriage that you had when you were single. And people say, well, that doesn't sound very spiritual. I'm telling you, it's huge. And the couples that I've seen work extra hard to get out of debt as a prerequisite to marriage, they would never tell you, I wish we'd gotten married earlier. What they'll tell you is, we got out of debt quicker. We were so motivated to live cheaply, and then they develop better financial habits. And as you know, one of the primary problems in marriage is financial. And the reason they're problems, it's not income generally, it's spending and a lack of discipline. So they develop the discipline they needed financially, which is a spiritual issue. I mean, it is such a heart spiritual issue. So that's number one. are, that's one of the things. I don't know if it's number one. I think the other thing that I always encourage people to do, and it goes back to our previous conversation, that little book I wrote, Enemies of the Heart, heart issues surface in marriage almost overnight. I mean, 2 or 3 weeks in, people look at their spouse like, who is this person I'm married? I've never seen this before. I've never seen that rage before. I didn't know they were so jealous. I didn't know they were going to put me on an allowance. He's treating me like I'm 16 years old. The heart issues surface in marriage in a way they never surface in a single. So in terms of preparation, to sit down with somebody and to make sure you've dealt with these enemies of your heart, because they wreck marriages like crazy. Because we're all on our best behavior when we're dating. After all, we're trying to win somebody's heart. So, of course, we behave. So I think doing the difficult work of dealing with the past is really, really huge. As I tell singles all the time, you know, preparation trumps a promise every time. A promise is worthless, really. I mean, I can make promises that I'm unable to keep. And I think every Saturday in churches and chapels all over this country, men and women stand at an altar and they make promises that they're not equipped to keep. If I promised you that I'm going to go outside and pick up the back end of my car, it doesn't matter how much I promise, I'm unable to pick up the back end of my car. And promising to stay married and promising to death do us part, promise, 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 promises are worthless. Preparation is everything. So the question you ask is an important one, because it's to the degree that a couple prepares for marriage that they're going to have a great marriage. Do not marry someone whose behavior is something that concerns you based on the fact that they promise you they're going to change. Promises are worthless. Preparation is everything.
All right. Good thoughts there. So thank you so much. Andy Stanley has been joining us here to talk about everything related to dating and marriage, and maybe not everything, but you know, good overview on some things. And like I said on the front end, he has been there. He is in the spheres of many different folks, including young adults, not only at his churches, but as he's out and about speaking and writing. And just really a privilege to talk to you today, Andy. Thanks so much for joining us and being part of this conversation at the Boundless Show.
Thank you so much, Lisa. I hope we can chat again soon.
Well, we are opening up this week's inbox, and I'm very privileged to have Christina Browning in the studio with me. She is a member of our Focus Counseling Department. Hey, Christina.
Hey.
Very good to have you here. It's been a while.
I know.
I know. What's up with that? The other counselors are just hogging all the time.
That's right.
That's okay. That's okay. We love it when you guys come down. Well, you are going to tackle a question for us today, and it is, one of my good friends recently got engaged. She's a believer, and he is not. What do I do? Do I celebrate with them? Do I let her know this isn't God's plan? I don't want to be a party pooper because I love her, and I love celebrating with people. Any suggestions?
Yes, this is always a hard one because we care so much about our friends and we want to see them successful in their marriage. And I think it comes down to knowing what you can support and what you can't support. And I think in this situation, it's important before you do anything to really take some time and pray intentionally for your friend that she would be open to hearing what God has for her. As you do that, I think there will be an opportunity, if you are a good friend, that you don't just stand by and do nothing, but that you realize where your friend is at and being willing to hear the truth of the situation. As we all know, unwanted advice is rarely followed. So being able to look for an opportunity to speak the truth to her and maybe sit down and say, hey, you know, I have some concerns about what I see you doing, but you know that I love you and I want to see you successful. And knowing ultimately if she goes through with this marriage, she needs a good friend. It's going to be hard. She's going to need you to be there with her. So as far as supporting or not supporting, you know, everybody needs to make that individual decision by themselves. But I do think it's important to at least have a conversation to say, hey, I have some concerns. I see some red flags. Have you thought about this? And if they're not receptive to that information, you've done your part as a friend, and pray that God will open up the door for that.
Yeah. It really seems like, you know, since she is proclaiming to be a believer, you know, I would hope that she has other people in her life too that have kind of brought this to her attention or really praying for her and really surrounding her. I see it as kind of like an all points bulletin of this is that right time frame right now where really a decision can be made, and she can hopefully, you know, see the truth of the situation and know, you know, truth is truth, and God's pretty explicit in his word about marriage and the importance of being equally yoked in that mm-hmm. sense. You know, it's interesting, Christina, I don't know if you've counseled people where, because I know a number of friends who, or have a couple who have married unbelievers, and it's not like their marriages are disasters. They've married good guys. So right. A lot of people will say, no, I married a good guy. But right. It doesn't negate the fact that God's plan for us really is different.
Absolutely.
And, yeah.
And any marriage can be successful if you're willing to do the work of it. Mm-hmm. But there's a difference between, okay, I'm going to have to work through this issue versus this is God's best for my life. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so to be able to step back from that and know they're making an active choice to say we're going to be unequally yoked and this is going to be an issue that we're going to have to work through. It's going to be hard.
And she's making an active choice to marry someone that she is not sure will ever come to Christ.
Right.
And she's looking at potentially spending eternity apart from him.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times we go into this just thinking of the next few years and just, oh, we'll be able to work it out and he's great and whatever. But you're looking at potentially eternal consequences.
Absolutely. It would be nice if the friend that has concerns, if they were aware of somebody in the church who was in that situation, because there are, mm-hmm. you know, oftentimes people in the church that are married to non-believers and struggling through that, and to be able to connect with one of those women to say, hey, you know, would you consider talking with so-and-so who is in a marriage with a non-believer, and be able to get some perspective if this friend who's getting married would be willing to do that. It would be helpful information. And there's lots of resources out there that, you know, could give insight to that. But I think it comes down to what level of relationship do you have with the person who's getting married? Are they receptive to that information? Mm-hmm. And being able to hear you?
Yeah.
You can't preach to a deaf person who's not willing to hear mm-hmm. the truth of the situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, and thank goodness for prayer that really does have a supernatural power to change hearts, and God can
absolutely.
Do that.
Absolutely. I think that's the most powerful thing you can do, is to pray that this friend will be open and have an encounter with Jesus that will open her eyes to the truth.
Yeah, absolutely. He's able to do that. And pray for him too, because we don't know what God might do in his heart, and
absolutely.
Not to say that, you know, that's just going to be some stopgap measure or whatever, but God could very in a very real way change him. So
absolutely.
Christina, thanks so much for weighing in on this. Hopefully it'll be encouraging for this listener and for anyone else out there that finds themselves in a similar situation. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, that is it for this week's show. As always, we want to hear from you. Write to us at editor@boundless.org so we can answer your question on a future show. Or maybe you want to go back and find our site and scroll through some past answers, whether on the podcast or on our Boundless Answers feature that always comes out on Mondays. Don't forget, also, we have a counseling department here at Focus on the Family. They are accessible. If you call our main number, 1-800-FAMILY, someone there will listen to your concern and direct you to the appropriate person. We also have a ton of resources on focusonthefamily.com. That's it for this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org, focused on the family.